you're a California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. I'm your host, Phil. As always, with me is my trusty co-host, the best and fastest researcher in the West. And tonight, we're welcoming back a very special guest, San Diego County Supervisor Jim Desmond. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Phil. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's perfect timing, I think, because you've been doing a great job, as we were talking about before we hopped on. You've been doing an incredible job of highlighting what's going on in San Diego County. You're always great at highlighting that stuff. But specifically, the first topic we're going to hop into right away, no pleasantries. We just got to get into it. What the heck's going on at the border? And how is it impacting San Diego County?
Well, I think you know what's going on at the border. Unfortunately, the border is open. It's wide open. You can walk through unimpeded into San Diego County. I visited a site about 60 miles east of the city of San Diego, along the border, called Jamul. That's spelt with a J, for those of you who don't know how to spell that one. But Jamul, California, and there's a hole in the fence right there. I went out New Year's Day with my media person, and I went there, and we saw an encampment, and there was about 30 people in this encampment. One of them came up and actually talked to me, and I asked him where he's from, and he told me he was from India. I said, India, how long have you been traveling? He said like a week or two. And I said, how'd you get here? And he said, via Cancun. And I said, well, then did you pay like someone in a cartel or something like that for your crossing or passage? And he said, no, he actually, somebody in India. So he got here by paying some group in India that got him across the border at our southern Mexican border. So it's not just us here, the cartel doing this, but this is throughout the country. I'm sorry, throughout the planet, I imagine, that entities can just buy their way into our country from their home place. But so what's going on right now is we've got probably about 600 to 900 street drop-offs a day. And a street drop-off is the Border Patrol has these big white buses. I don't know, they probably hold 60 or 80 people per bus. And they are being dropped off at a transit station in South San Diego County. And they're just being dropped off, you know, right next to the parking lot of where, you know, buses and a trolley all come together. And they're being dropped off there. And then they're just let out of the Border Patrol bus. And I was witnessing that, was there. And you just kind of heard the Border Patrol saying, hey, get out, you know, hop out, you're free. Free to go, free to do, you know, go wherever you're going. So there's a lot of confusion and bewilderment there. And it's happening every day. And then right now, there's a nonprofit group or two that is actually picking them up in another bus, you know, an hour or two later, to take them to San Diego Airport. And incidentally, this place where they're being dropped off at, there's no facilities. There's no gas station nearby. There's no 7-Eleven. There's no bathrooms there at all. And so the nonprofits are taking the migrants to the airport and basically dropping them off at the airport. So now San Diego Airport has become our new migrant center.
Yeah, two things you brought up. I think it's important for people to realize that this is not just a Latin American issue. And we had done sort of a breakdown of the debate last week. I think we did an episode, and a reporter from Telemundo asked and kind of conflated the issue of immigration, what's going on at the border, and Latino voters. And I think more people need to realize, okay, first, we shouldn't be conflating the issue of illegal immigration and Latino voters. This is an issue where people are coming from all over the country and just pouring across the border. And that should be something that we should be more concerned about, is that there's no way to vet a lot of these people who are coming, and it's from all over, from Asia, from parts of Africa, from Europe. Like, it's incredible how many people just know the border's wide open in the South. You can just get across, right? Did I lose you, or did I lose myself?
Oh, Phil. Yeah, I know you're breaking up on me.
Phil, you're breaking up a bunch.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was talking about conflate. The issue was so many times people conflate Latino voters and illegal immigration as if like it's one and the same. And I think you brought up a good point that it's not. We shouldn't be focusing so much on that.
No, Phil, you're breaking up, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I losing?
Yeah, I'm here, but Phil keeps breaking up. We're not getting much of what he's saying.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, but we only hear like parts of sentences.
Oh, okay. Camille, ask a question and I'll be right back.
Okay.
Okay. I was actually going to ask anyway, from the time that they come into the border and get on the buses to the airport, what is it like right away? Like they're on the buses to the airport, or is there a few days in between? What's going on there?
What, right now, and I was only down there one day. This was on Sunday of this week. And there, when I got there about 7:30 in the morning, there was already about 40 migrants just kind of hanging around in the parking lot. And then within about a half an hour, a big Border Patrol bus came and dropped off a group of people. And then another Border Patrol bus came and dropped off a group of people about 20 minutes later. And then about an hour later, a nondescript bus that we could only assume is a charity or nonprofit is coming and picking them up and then taking them actually to another transit center where they get on a shuttle bus that takes them to the airport. So it's kind of sporadic there. I think there's just one bus back and forth to the airport. It's about a 35-40 minute ride to the airport from that site. And so there's probably about an hour and a half between buses as they come to take them to the airport. So, and we're getting about, according to Border Patrol, our Border Patrol contacts between 600 and 900 people a day.
And do we have any idea from the airport where they're going? Everywhere?
No. Everywhere. And matter of fact, there were some people there that I did interact with, and they had, there were two people from Guinea. There was, you know, and what they, he, this gentleman came up to me and he asked me, you know, is how do I get to, it was Virginia, some address in Virginia. And I said, you know, you're in San Diego. You're a long way from Virginia. And you're going to
Go ahead.
And you're going to have to go, you know, you have to get an airplane ride to the airport. And then he asked, well, do I have to pay for that? I said, you're going to have to pay for tickets to get there. And another gentleman came up and it had a you know, kind of on a little piece of paper scratched out an address in New Jersey. And so they're going all over the place. But unfortunately, they're spending a day or two at our airport and sleeping in the airport because they can't always get a flight out right away. And so that's, you know, we're a tourist city and that's what people see. That's our doormat, you know, to people arriving in San Diego and seeing the homeless people in the airport's not a good first look.
I thought I read it's been over 100,000 people since October crossing the border in San Diego.
Yeah. Yeah, and we had a different situation until just like a week ago. San Diego County, my peers, actually voted to fund a migrant drop-off center. And basically what it was we were their travel agent. We were helping them get onto flights. We were giving them bus rides, you know, to and from the airport. Border Patrol was bringing, you know, wouldn't even bring them to that site because they don't do that. So we were funding a bus to go pick the migrants up at the border, and we were burning through about $1.5 million a month. And so that lasted just a little over almost 6 months. And over $6 million is what we spent. And I was never in favor of this because I thought, well, this is an immigration issue. We're using local tax dollars, which we should be using on our own homeless issues or streets, roads, infrastructure, things like that. And the so luckily my colleagues finally gave up also after $6 million. And so now we are just having these street drop-offs that seem to have no end here in San Diego County.
Phil sent me an article about that, so I'm sure he wants to get into that for a minute, but I'm not done, Phil, so just hang out. No, just kidding. I want to make it like, this is going to sound sarcastic, but I'm kind of serious. And let me preface it by saying that, because, you know, there's typically like, there's a split that people like in generalizing, not every individual, but on the right, we are for Border Patrol And we typically are accused of like, oh, you don't believe in climate change and taking care of the earth. Whereas, you know, on the left, the people are screaming, no, we need to bring these people in. We need to help them open borders and also, you know, save the planet. So are these buses zero emissions? Like, I'm kind of not kidding here. Because that's a lot of... Okay.
No.
That doesn't line up then. All right. No. I needed to say that.
Okay.
Welcome back. Go ahead.
Okay. Am I back? Can you guys hear me?
We can
hear you.
Okay. So far. Yeah. So far. Fingers crossed. What was the article you were referring to? I sent you a bunch of articles.
I have it open. Let me tell you which one. I think it was the one where they voted 4-1 and he was the one lone vote about the federal dollars that are supposed to be reimbursed. But of course, that's not going to happen right away.
Well, and what it was the my colleagues brought forth an agenda item at their last board meeting to try to set up a federally funded migrant drop-off center in the county of San Diego. And because primarily we were funding one for a while, and I just, you know, I think we're just being complicit to a broken system, a system where it just allows people to walk into our country and then ask for asylum, be granted it. They're driven to a migrant drop-off center. We shouldn't be. This is not the way.
Uh-oh, you cut out.
Anyway. I had a phone call come in. Well,
you're an important man, so of course you're having phone calls come in.
Yeah. So anyway, I lost where I was going. They wanted to have another migrant drop-off center, but beg and plead from the federal government to fund this thing. And I just thought, I don't want to be complicit in this failed, broken system. And if the federal government isn't going to fund New York or Chicago, they're not going to fund San Diego County with any of these dollars. And I just think that the whole system is broken, that people can just walk across the border unimpeded. When I was out there in January, we witnessed people being dropped off on the other side. There was a Border Patrol agent right near us, just watching the people come through the hole and then going right towards the Border Patrol agent and asking for asylum. And one thing that's kind of ironic that we've noted is that it used to be in the Obama administration, the Trump administration, the Clinton administration, and Bush administration, migrants, illegal people crossing the border illegally would run from the Border Patrol. And now they're running to the Border Patrol. And the Border Patrol is just letting them in, and they know it. And so what I hate is we've got a system that works. If we'd allow it to work, but we're allowing people to jump ahead of the line. We've got embassies all around the world for people to go to apply, ask for asylum, ask for visas, and go through that process. You can also do it online. But why should you do that when for about $5,000, you can come across our border unimpeded, you know, freely, illegally, and then just ask for asylum? Why would you go through that process? And I think that's what really needs to be fixed. Passage from the Congress. He doesn't need a piece of paper from them saying, you know, with a note saying, yes, you can do that. He's got that capability. He just refuses to do it.
From what I've seen from, this is from social media, so I want to know if this is what you saw, is that the majority of the border crossings are the young men, like young adult men. Is that what you saw?
That is what we saw. However, so that group is being dropped off in our streets. There's actually another group, if you come across, you're a family, if you're elderly or pregnant, or you've got children with you, you go through a different process. And that is funded by the federal government. But that entity is already at capacity, beyond capacity. So basically what you're seeing is we're getting the single adults being dropped off. And I would estimate 75 to 80% of them are all male, young males.
The one thing that I think that stood out to me in that article regarding where you were the lone vote, and I agree with you, is that's a perfect point. Setting up a long-term migrant facility just kind of says, well, this is it. This is how it's going to be. This is what we're dealing with now. When in reality, it's kind of like you have to go back to the, it's like a sickness, and this is a symptom. We have to cure the actual problem.
Yeah.
Which is the border has to be more secure. We have to know who's coming in. And just by setting up a long-term care facility or a long-term migrant facility, how is that not just sending a beacon to anybody who's coming across? Well, as long as you get in and get into San Diego, then you can stay in San Diego for a little bit longer. You can get, you know, government assistance. And I think that's not solving the problem. And I think you would agree with me.
Yeah. I do not want to accept this as the status quo and this is how it's going to be forever. And this is craziness. And to be honest with you, it's you know, we all like to point fingers at everybody. You know, they blame the cartels or blame the migrants. It's our border. And we're the ones that are allowing this to happen. It's us. And to blame the Republicans or the Democrats, it's like right now the Democrats are in charge of the border with Biden there, but he's just letting people come in without any sort of proper vetting into the country, coming in ahead of the line.
What's unfortunate, I agree with you on your vote about the federal dollars, is that, you know, like you guys talked about, it's basically like putting a Band-Aid on like a gushing wound. But at the same time, using San Diego County's dollars is unfair too, because you guys just happen to be there. And yet now you're the ones responsible for it when, like you said, these dollars need to be going for inside your county. While the rest of us are not paying for it, but it's affecting the entire, well, apparently the entire nation, but the entire state as well.
Yeah. And so what's ironic is you hear
unfair issue.
Yeah, what's ironic is you hear the mayor of Chicago and the mayor of New York, you know, griping at Governor Abbott for busing people into their communities. Well, the federal government is doing that to us. So there's no real difference here, except the feds are doing it as opposed to Governor Abbott.
Yeah, and there, Biden pointing the finger might be one of the lamest excuses a president can give. In terms of, well, I don't have the power. I mean, presidents right now are cloaked with enormous executive power. I mean, they're in charge of all of these agencies. We saw that power being wielded by President Trump. I mean, he should have remembered. He revoked all those executive orders. I doubt he actually remembers that far back. But he revoked all those executive orders that Trump had in place to help slow sort of the flow of migrants across the southern border. Now he's pretending like, oh, I don't have this power. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I need Congress to do it, which makes it a political football that they now kick back and forth.
Well, and all he wants Congress to do is to fund what he's doing right now, the current policy. He doesn't want to change the policy. He wants to keep letting people in. He just wants more Border Patrol agents to process the numbers of people that are coming in. He's not fixing it. He just wants funding for what's happening now. And I think I think the Republicans or, you know, whoever the opposition is, be it Republicans or Democrats at this point in time, are right. It's like, no, what you're doing is you just want to continue the bad policy that got us here in the first place.
Yeah.
The one thing I was saying before I hopped on here
talk amongst yourself for about 5 seconds. My battery's going low on my phone. I got to plug it in.
Okay.
We'll talk amongst ourselves. Rhode Island. It's neither a road nor an island. Discuss. That's an old SNL joke, if people don't remember that.
Well, we only have a couple seconds, but I think we're taking next week off.
Possibly. We might be doing election results, but on a different day. So we'll update listeners next week. Far as I know, I'm still on NBC for next week. So yes. Anyway,
announce that real fast.
That I'll be on NBC doing election analysis next week. Yes. I'll be on NBC next week. NBC 7 here in San Diego. So,
Jim is back.
Looking forward to it. We were just talking today with a mutual friend, how I'm going to have to learn how to put makeup on for TV.
Please don't learn how to put makeup on. Just get it done.
I'll just have my wife do it because I don't know how to put on makeup.
Supervisor Jim Desmond is back with us.
He just walked into a conversation about makeup. Right. So I was going to ask.
I mean, he has a wife.
I have a wife. She can help me. Well, one of the issues I saw, you know, economy is always the top thing on voters' minds. Affordability and immigration are the top three. And I wanted to ask your opinion on a larger scale rather than just San Diego County. How do you think Americans and Californians are viewing this issue at the border right now with what's going on in light of the country and the economy and inflation, all that stuff?
I think this is focus number one right now, because this is being felt throughout the country, the immigration issue. And with, you know, you hear about mayors wanting to shut down schools or parks or things like that to allow immigrants to stay. You see, oh, Chicago O'Hare Airport with immigrants staying there. So I think this is very top of mind here. And of course, everybody's is still concerned about you know, inflation, the cost of everything, getting, you know, much more expensive. Housing is a big issue as well. But I do think immigration is forefront of mind here, particularly, you know, in a campaign year. This always seems to heat up, but we never seem to get it fixed or get ahead of it. And like I said, I just think if we stop letting people cut ahead of the line, and it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, nobody thinks anybody should cut ahead of the line. And once you do that, then you get the chaos that ensues, and that's where we are right now. So, but I do think it's top of mind. But there's, you know, other issues that people are struggling with, and schools, and it's I think there's a lot of tension in the air for Americans and daily life nowadays.
You don't have to answer this if this is what do they call it, inside baseball. I don't want to put you at, you know, on at risk of your job.
But you're going to do it anyway, huh?
I'm going to try. I'm going to try my best. You can just say decline to comment. How much of this issue that San Diego is facing with migration?
Cut out.
I was anticipating this question, and he just.
Am I back? I cut out right now.
Technical
happened.
Issues.
Okay, so my question was, how much of this migration problem has prevented San Diego County and the county supervisors from tackling other issues in the county because of funding?
A lot. I mean, we're spending, in the last 4 months, when we're spending $6 million on this effort, it's taking a lot of our eye off the ball. And the money, that the pot of money that this was came out of was homelessness and behavioral health dollars. It was a pot of money, which we still have not fixed. But that pot of money is where this came from. And luckily, we stopped spending it. But it's taken our eye off the ball of a lot of things. You know, homelessness has been our number one issue for a long time. Well, now, unfortunately, it's in kind of in the back, you know, behind the migrant issue that we're having right now. And a lot of the focus tends to be on the airport now, because there are pictures of people sleeping in the airport. Somebody's been there for the last 5 days. So this has taken a lot of energy from the Board of Supervisors here in San Diego County that could and should be spent on our own local issues as opposed to the migrant issues.
Okay, you said it's taking from the homeless fund and the mental health fund.
Yes.
Is that what you said? Okay,
yes.
No, we're not ready to delve into this, but I have to bring this up. We did an episode on like dissecting Prop 1 a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And for me, the biggest takeaway from Prop 1 was the fact that it actually takes from the local resources of homelessness and mental health from the counties and sent to Sacramento. And so should Prop 1 pass, that's only going to escalate your issues and make it worse on you guys. Because you said those funds pretty much were, you only have so many, they only go so far. And now Sacramento wants to take those funds. What's going to happen to you guys? Like, that will completely screw over San Diego County.
San Diego. Yeah. Beating the drum for his new tax for Prop 1. And he says, well, the counties, you're going to get it back. You know, you're going to get it back. But if anything we get back from Sacramento has strings attached and makes it, you know, and that's what really has caused the amount of homelessness that we have or the homelessness crisis that we have here in California with Sacramento and their wacky laws. And then and taking money now and saying we're going to have one size fits all for California by taking your money to Sacramento, and then we're going to decide, you know, how it's going to be spent. I mean, San Diego County is a lot different than San Francisco County.
Absolutely.
It's a lot different than the LA County, Imperial County, Riverside County. We all got our own little niches and things like that and issues we have to deal with. And now it's just like the failed policies that got us there in the first place. They want to take more of our money and implement these things even more on us. Yeah, no.
That's horrible. It's a horrible idea. What could possibly go wrong? I think Phil wants to talk to us, but he's
trying.
He's trying.
I'm trying. I don't know what's going on. Can we talk about whether or not we can get better internet in San Diego County? That might be a good...
Where are you? Are you in San Diego?
I'm right in PB. I'm right in the heart of the city. So I don't know why my
Phil's
internet
in San Diego.
I don't
want to give his exact location.
Oh, that's okay. Oh, well, you're not using government Wi-Fi, are you? Because I find that doesn't always work.
No, I pay plenty enough to Spectrum to use this Wi-Fi.
Oh, I don't know.
Camille, I actually had it all set up perfectly with Jim. That was a leading question. See, this is what lawyers do. That was a leading question to get Jim into the topic of Prop 1 and homelessness, and it worked perfectly.
See, that's why I set it up. That's why I took over. I constantly tease Phil that I'm going to take over California Underground, and this is why.
Hey, you're doing a good job, Camille. He is just like half here and half not.
Yeah, I'm all over the place. But anyway, as I was saying, that was a leading question. Jim led into it perfectly about homelessness. And we were talking more about Prop 1. And you were against Prop 1. We saw you when we were doing the episode on Prop 1. You commented. My general stance is whenever I see a bond, I vote no. Because a bond eventually becomes a tax. Because we have to pay for it. And with the state already in the red by so much, by tens of billions of dollars, $70 billion at this point, it eventually becomes a tax. All right, I'll get this question out as fast as possible. Prop 1, is it just addressing... is it throwing money
Katie's
at a problem
a that like Katie Porter.
I got lost again? Did I come back?
You're back. Be quick.
Okay. Is it just throwing money at a problem that has bigger issues that we need to solve in California rather than just mental health?
And what this is, and you mentioned it, it's a bond. And so Gavin, when he was here today, was talking to newscasters, and I was being interviewed by some of them, and they told me that, well, the governor said this isn't a tax. Well, yes, it is. It's you know, that's just political speak and hocus pocus. It's a bond that we're going to go out to the bond market and get a loan essentially, but it's going to have to be paid back, and it's $6 billion. So by the time it's paid back, and maybe it's over 20 years or 30 years or whatever it is, it's going to be $10 billion or $12 billion by the time we pay it back. But he's calling it not a tax. So yes, it's going to have to be paid back, and it's going to have to be paid back by the taxpayers. So to say it's not a tax is bad enough. And then secondly, what I've been arguing is Sacramento really caused this homeless situation in the first place. It was they thought, bad intentions, or bad things happen, even with good intentions, when they let all of the nonviolent criminals out of jail. And they let them out of jail, and basically they went to our streets without any resources, without any training, without any prospects of jobs or being able to fend for themselves, and they became our homeless. And then Sacramento has, through their infinite lack of wisdom, created all these hindrances where we basically have our communities have our hands tied behind our back as far as getting people off the streets and into the help they need. And so here's this Prop 1 touting that it's going to fix everything, but it's really just a tax, and they're not changing any of their policies. It's the policies that need to change. It's not the reason we have homelessness is not because Californians haven't been taxed enough. And that's what's really coming down here. They're saying, okay, you need to pay more taxes so we can fix homelessness. That's not the problem. The problem is the policies. So if they get more money and they get more money and they haven't changed any policies, this is just throwing, bad money or good money after bad, because we've already spent billions of dollars with the failed policies and not gotten anywhere. Matter of fact, we've gotten worse over the last couple of years.
I think the one issue that we discussed is housing affordability And sorry, am I still just crapping out the whole time?
No, you're good.
Actually, you're good.
Okay. The question is affordability, I think, is the number one thing, not mental health services. And I think that's a grander issue with the state and how much the state taxes and regulates us and makes it unaffordable to live here, between how much gas tax we have to pay and how expensive it is to build houses and zoning laws and all that. But that Democrats don't want to remove those, because it would show that would have to admit that those things don't work, and they don't want to do that. So instead, they would rather drop billions of dollars to build these shelters and these beds and have something tangible to point at and have a nice press conference and go, look at this. Isn't this wonderful? This is nice. Big housing complex with beds and all that stuff. And look what we did. This is what we did with Prop 1, is we built these beds in these shelters and all of that. And I think that they're just neglecting what really is the issue, is affordability here in California.
Well, yeah, and this Prop 1, I got a little pushback from one of the reporters and say, well, this Prop 1 is going to bring 2,000 beds for veterans. I says, that's nothing for about a $6 billion. And for the state of California, we could use 2,000 beds for veterans here in San Diego County. And this is going to be statewide, that this is the reason you should vote for this thing. But you're right about the housing and affordability. And I forget there, I think it was University of Point Loma Nazarene here in San Diego. And they had came up with a study. It's about 4 or 5 years old now, but it's probably worse now. But I think it was like 47 or 48% of the cost of the house was government regulations. And right. And we keep putting more and more this vehicle miles travel attack or implements on any new housing and more government just getting in the way of builders building housing and just adding to the cost of it. I think they all want us to live in apartments right next to a transit stop and give up the single family home and give up your car. That's kind of seems to be the push. And so housing is not affordable here in San Diego County. And plus nobody, I always run up against this whenever we try to approve a housing development, no matter how big or small, nobody wants any new housing built next to them.
Right.
And why is that? Traffic. Number one issue is traffic. So we're really kind of chasing our tail and unfortunately can't build the amount of housing that we really need. And to kind of go back to the homeless issue, one of the things that I think we're really missing with the homelessness is even if we do get somebody off the streets and we get them through detox, we get them cleaned up, we get them so they're clean and sober, that person is probably not very likely to get a decent paying job right away, and they can't even afford affordable housing. We need to have some type of, and I've been pushing for this in North County, some type of transitional housing or housing, group housing or dorm type housing or something like that, to where we can get the people who are cleaned up and we have them in a clean and sober environment. Because what's happening now is people, even if they do get clean and sober, they're back out on the streets and it's just a revolving door. And we spend all that time and money and effort into helping them get clean. But there's not enough of that type of housing or bridge housing to even get to affordable housing. And that's really what we're kind of facing, what I'm trying to work on here in San Diego County.
I'd like to make a few comments on what you said. Even regarding housing, with so many people coming into California constantly, like you said, no one wants, these apartment complexes built right next to them because traffic, we lack the infrastructure. Schools are already overcrowded, and then we need more schools, which is just going to require more tax dollars, of course. And so you're not only are you dealing with traffic, you're dealing with now lack of education for these kids, to go to, or they're just going to have to go further in these already overcrowded schools. And so that's obviously one issue with the housing. And then regarding the homeless people, there's no denying we have a homeless issue, and a lot of it does come down to addiction and mental health. But a lot of it, going back to affordable housing, I've been reading more and more almost daily where they're doing these studies and they're finding that people, they aren't dealing with mental health issues or addictions. They simply were priced out of their housing. You know, they downsized to an apartment and then even the apartment was too expensive with roommates. And eventually they went into their cars and then eventually they just not needed to move themselves, their spouse, their kids, whatever, into a tent. And then of course they're told they can't be on the streets in their tent. And, you know, and then they go to these houses. And so I haven't worked a ton with homeless people, but I have worked closely with my church with homeless people. And I've actually sat down and talked to many of them. They don't all have mental health issues and addiction.
No.
After living on the streets for a while, they do become very distrusting of the homeless housing and the transitional housings that are available to them, because there are a bunch of people that are addicts and have mental health issues that are now, like, obviously women are getting, you know, raped in these homes. They're all people's belongings are getting stolen and stuff. So they feel safer actually finding some corner in an alley to sleep in versus going into these homes.
And you're so right. And that's one of the issues about housing first, is that this housing first model, which is the only model the state of California and the county of San Diego will let you use, is, you know, it sounds good on the surface of let's get people into housing and then work on their issues. Well, if they, you know, especially drugs and alcohol, and if they refuse help, we can't force it on them. So then you've got, you know, a family living two or three doors down with kids, and then you've got this drug addict still there. Yeah. I think if they come into a facility, they've got to get clean and sober, go through detox, and you've got a much better chance of success. But this is what Housing First allows, is it allows that bad element to seep in to the, you know, people that are trying to get cleaned up. And to be honest with you, we have been able to help a lot of people, and particularly the people you talked about, Camille, that are, you know, just down on their luck, and, you know, they can't afford the housing anymore. And the biggest population for that right now is seniors. We're seeing where seniors are getting priced out. I just talked with a mobile home park up in Valley Center, where the rent prices are going up 70%. And a lot of the people who live there are seniors, and they're on a fixed income. They can't afford this. And then, so the county, we do have programs where we can help in certain situations, pay your rent or help with utility bills to keep you in your house or keep you in, housed. So we do have some programs for that, but you're right. And unfortunately right now, so we are building a lot more senior affordable housing. That seems to be housing that neighbors will accept or won't get all up in arms about. And so I'm trying in North County in Escondido, across from the old hospital. There's a site there of county land. We're trying to put senior affordable housing also in Fallbrook. And so that we can hopefully capture those folks that are, you know, they're not, you're right, they're not drug addicts. They're not, you know, addicted to things. They're just poor and down on their luck. And so we have a net, but it's not, you know, it doesn't catch everybody, but we understand and realize, and we're trying to help those that want help. We're happy to help, but it's those that are primarily still on their streets are those that don't want help.
Yeah.
I think I might have fixed my issues with what was going on. I think I had too many apps open. Yeah. Well, hey, what have you guys been talking about? How's it been going?
Hey, we're done, Phil.
Oh, we're done? Nice. Okay. Well, on that note, thanks for tuning in, everybody. One comment, first off, now that I'm back and I have access to speaking to you guys, it seems like this immigration and homelessness are both sort of the same issue, where we're putting Band-Aid on an axe wound, where we're not addressing the real issues. Mm-hmm. And politicians are happy to kind of throw money at it and hope that that works and it just goes away.
That seems to be the theme of the night.
That seems to be the theme. The connecting theme is that in California specifically, we don't want to really want to talk about the hard issues and how we solve it. We just throw money at it. But I think you had brought up the issue of, like, we're starting to see the immigration issue and homeless issue. It's touching blue cities and blue governors and blue mayors. And I want to get your opinion on, do you think the tide is changing a little bit on these two subjects? Because for so long, it was sort of the same thing. But now I think it's coming home to roost. And I think these politicians in these blue cities, they're starting to feel it. I think they're starting to feel it from their constituents that we need to do something, and we're not going to sit by and let you just shower us with platitudes, right?
Well, you're right on many fronts there. One thing I've noticed is the way government deals and fixes things is either, or they do both, is grow government bigger and charge more money for it and charge taxes. And so, but I do think, and I'm hoping that the rest of the country, this is having the same wake up call that we at the border communities have had, you know, and had to deal with, you know, this mayor of, I forget which one it is, but I think it was mayor of New York just said, well, hey, we should be able to deport these felons who are immigrants and committing crimes, here in New York. And that's the same in the state of California. We can't deport people, even though they've committed crimes. And it's so much to the fact, I think it was SB 54 that passed several years ago. Police cannot work with or collaborate with ICE. Even if somebody gets out of jail and they're in, you know, they're here illegally, they did some time in a local jail, county jail, whatever time that is, when they get released, law enforcement is restricted from even letting ICE know that, hey, here's this illegal person that's here. They just got out of jail. We can't. We are locked in by these crazy laws here in California. And so I thought it was ironic when the mayor of New York said, hey, wait a minute, I had all these, you know, my cops beat up in Times Square. And what do you mean we can't deport these people? And that's, you know, so I am, you know, it's kind of bittersweet that it's happening elsewhere, but hopefully we're going to rise up. And I'm hoping it's a big determination in this fall's election as to how people are voting.
Yeah, it was interesting. I saw a meme with Eric Adams and they put Trump's hair on him. Because they showed the tweet that he wanted to start working with ICE and trying to deport people. Yeah, I just think it's interesting because it's come to their doorstep. And I think, as crazy as it sounds, the biggest political move that red state governors like Texas and Florida did was, okay, well, if you're the sanctuary states, you want to deal with it, you're all for it, great, you can have the migrants. I thought it was great when they dropped them off at Martha's Vineyard. And the fact that at Martha's Vineyard, they rushed to get them back off the island. They were just so happy to get them off the island in 24 hours. And I think it is having an effect, and especially when you see stuff like, we're going to give debit cards with $10,000 on it in New York City. And you just scratch your head and you say, people who are here can't afford groceries and housing and electricity and internet and all that stuff. And then you're giving out $10,000 debit cards. I think at a certain point, you're going to get a big swath of voters who may have thought one way or just voted and pulled the lever for the Democratic Party. They may go in November and just go, you know what? I'm tired of the same old, same old. Maybe I try the other side this time around. What do you think?
I'm hoping, I'm crossing my fingers and hoping so that people will do that. You know, we roll out the welcome mat. Not only do we allow people to come across the border unimpeded, but we roll out the welcome mat. It's like, okay, wink, wink, nod, nod. If you can get across the border, come to my city or come to my state. It's an asylum state or, you know, a sanctuary state, and we'll help you. We won't prosecute you. So we lay that out there. And then we also, you know, in California now, we're going to give you Medicaid. Medi-Cal in California. So you're going to have health care. And now there's a bill just being proposed in Sacramento that is going to allow migrants dollars for them to buy their first homes. And whereas, you know, that money should be, you know, first and foremost to U.S. citizens, but now they're just as equal. And also in California is migrants get the same resident status when they're going to universities and things like that here in California, just like somebody, you know, unlike somebody from out of state. So we roll out this welcome mat and just keep inviting more people to break our laws. We're going to look the other way. Now, you know, it's the mess we're in and, you know, it's our own fault. You know, I think I said earlier, we blame the cartels or blame, you know, the Russians or whoever it is. It's us. And we got to fix it from within.
But did you know that at least we have a state mushroom now? We got that passed.
No.
So you know.
What is it? Is it had a name? What kind of mushroom?
I don't recall. I should look that up because I know that's really important information that I should have off the top of my head. So I apologize. But yeah, we've got that going for us.
Well, you and I are listening to different news sources.
This is the stuff that Camille comes up with. Is we named a new state mushroom.
Sorry, I'll turn off my mic and just.
No. We're all talking gloom and doom. We need some interaction here. That's
you've been carrying the show all night because of my technical difficulties. Final thought, and I want to thank you for sticking it out. I know you've been dealing with some sinuses and stuff, so yeah. I know you could talk about this stuff all night, but I also don't want you to lose your voice altogether. A little off topic. Have you been advising all the businesses in your district of San Diego County to start adding a bakery on so that they don't have to pay $20 in minimum wage? Is that something you've been telling your businesses?
Start selling Panera. Yeah, is that it? The bakeries are exempt? Is that what it was?
As long as you bake on premises.
They bake their fresh don't have bread. To pay. So
Subway?
So that's exactly Subway. What Bill and I were saying. Jersey Mike's, Subway. Now, what about any Mexican fast food? Are they making their own tortillas or chips? Like, isn't that kind of along the same lines? Shouldn't they be exempt? Now let's talk about desserts, fresh cookies. Where does this end? But the main point here is why do the increases for the cost of living? They deserve a living wage. And so we need to increase their minimum wage because they deserve these dollars too. Why do Panera Bread employees not deserve a higher wage?
I think we all know why, and it's apparently my news sources say it was primarily to the big donation that
if you were a Panera Bread employee and you knew that everyone else was getting this big increase, would you not leave and go elsewhere?
Yeah, it'd bail but I don't know. I'm an old guy, but I remember the days when fast food jobs were a first stepping stone instead of a career.
Yes. And what's actually crazy is that I have a 16-year-old daughter. My sister has a 16-year-old daughter. They're like 2 weeks apart. They're both trying to get jobs. And pretty much nobody wants to hire unless they're 18, have more experience. I don't know how they're supposed to get experience, but they don't want to pay. Like, literally, fast food doesn't want to pay a 16-year-old $20 an hour right now.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, fast food, you've seen, I don't know if we're up against a timer stop or anything, but I don't know. The last McDonald's I went into, there was you went to a kiosk. You didn't go to a person. You went to a kiosk when you're inside, and you put hit the button or whatever it is that you want, and then you walk over and get your food. So they're really cutting back the number of employees, and that's really these increases. In even though they're may help a few, it's the industry is reacting to it and automating things. So it's really kind of counterproductive what they're doing. And as far as, trying to get people more money for the particular jobs, but it's just more, I think it's kind of good in a way that they're using automation, but I'm kind of a nerd, but it's detrimental, I think, to what's happening.
I was just looking forward to the side effect that there'll be a lot more bakeries in California because people are just going to start baking to get out of paying $20 minimum wage. Going back to that affordability issue, when we watched the Senate debate, it's amazing how all Democrats on that stage, I think it was Katie Porter who said, we need to get Washington off the bench and into the game when it comes to affordability. They need to get involved. And the last thing I always think of when you want to make things more affordable is definitely don't get the government involved.
Yeah.
And then when you're advocating for $50 minimum wage, like, these things happen and you see the reaction, which is Pizza Hut immediately fired 1,200 delivery drivers overnight. As soon as the bill passed, they were like, nope, we're just going to let 1,200 people go. So instead of making $20 an hour, those delivery drivers are making $0 an hour because they got fired. Again, kind of wrapping this all together, the idea of the government getting in to make things more affordable and help out always seems to backfire, especially here in California.
Yeah, it's definitely, and we got to let technology, you know, fix it, some of these problems that we have, and, you know, the automation and things like that. But I do, you know, I wouldn't mind. I like bakeries. So if there's baked goods, it's fresh baked goods on site, I might go to those places more often, but and maybe leave a bigger tip because I know their people aren't getting paid as much. But that's, I didn't realize that was the connection there with Panera, was the bakery. Yeah. Angle.
Hey, maybe the fast food will taste better because everything's gonna be fresh baked now.
Okay, so you got me going here. You got still some time?
Yeah, we got time.
Okay, the utilities charging based on household income as opposed to how much energy you use. Have you hit on that topic recently?
We haven't, I know that's. We haven't done a whole lot on it, but I know you've been following it. So explain to our listeners what is going on with that.
Well, basically, when you buy energy or SDG&E, there's two parts of the bill. There's the fixed rate, which is basically the transmission lines and whatever the infrastructure is to get that electricity to you. And then the other part of your bill is how much electricity you use. So SDG&E, and actually this is the state legislature that goofed this up or put this in place. So as much as people like to bash on SDG&E, it wasn't them, or PG&E or SoCal Edison. All across the state of California, utility companies now are going to be charging the fixed rate portion of your bill based on your household income. So you got roommates. It's going to be, you know, your income goes up. If you and your spouse are both working, your income goes up. And so it is like three tiers. The bottom tier, I think, is $69,000 and below. They're going to be paying $300-$400 extra a year, $300-$400 per year per household. Between $69,000 and I think $180,000 a year, you're paying maybe $800 or $900 per year for the fixed rate. And above $180,000, you're going to be paying about $1,700 a year for the fixed rate portion. Huh?
I'm sorry. I thought I turned my mic off. I was talking to my daughter.
That's okay. So anyway, but it's before you even if you put solar on your house and you're not even using one electron of electricity, you're going to be paying that fixed rate fee, not based on your energy you're using, but based on your household income. That's what was passed a couple of years ago. It's coming to fruition now. And so, I mean, that's the bad news. I mean, this is socialism. This is like, you know, okay, if it's going to be, you know, this utility, you pay per your based on your income, you know, water. What is that next? Or other forms of energy, the gas pump, you have to pay, you know, a certain amount based on your household income. And so luckily, there's been enough pushback and on this from both sides of the aisle that there's 21 Democrats who voted for this thing. Have now got a new bill coming in to retract it and change it dramatically to be only like $10 a year or something like that. So that hopefully is getting, you know, is coming back around. I don't know if it's going to pass or not to change it, but just the fact that that got passed and passed by the governor is to start charging you based on your income, not on usage. To me is just a terrible, terrible precedent. So hopefully that's going to change. But right now, that's the law of the land. And I think it's supposed to start January 2025. So if you put solar on your roof and you penciled it out to be, okay, it's going to pay off in like 5 or 7 years. Well, add a couple more years on that because you're going to be paying that fixed rate fee. And it's going to go up every year. So there's been a good amount of backlash on that fixed rate fee, but it's socialism and needs to be stopped.
Where I'm at, we have SoCal Edison. Sorry, Phil.
Yeah.
No. I was just going to say the only three people I really want to be sharing proof of income with are my employer, my wife, and my accountant. I just am flabbergasted that they think I'm going to share my proof of income with an electric company. Like
the state has it. You file your state income tax. They got it.
True.
No, so I was going to say
that's just so wrong that they can pass that information off to them. So terrifying. Actually,
Santa Barbara County had a fire a few years back, and they're SoCal Edison, or at least parts of them are SoCal Edison. And I didn't read the full article, so I'm going to probably butcher some details, but basically. It just came out this week, earlier this week, that they are responsible for the fire because it had something to do with their electrical work that caused this fire. And it's been determined that now they owe like $80 million in damages. And I read that, and I think people are supposed to look at that like, oh, it's a good thing. They're responsible for it. And I'm just looking at that going, well, my electric bill is going up to cover this. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, you're paying it, essentially. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. You want to wrap it up?
I feel like we could just do a whole episode on this, though.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting topic. And I'm glad you brought it up, because with everything else going on, I actually kind of forgot about it. But yeah, that it is terrifying, the stuff that comes out of Sacramento. And again, this is why we preach, like, until we're blue in the face. If you want things to change in California on a state level, you have to focus on your legislature.
Yeah.
Bottom line, period, end of story. Learn who your state assembly person is. Learn who your state senator is. And get out, and if you don't like them and they're passing these bills, go out and try and change it and try and vote somebody else in. Same thing with your county supervisor. Make sure you know who your county supervisor is. I feel like during COVID, a lot of people learned who their county supervisor was all of a sudden, which is a good thing. I think more people should know. Final thoughts from you, Jim, for tonight?
No, I want to say thank you to Phil and Camille. I mean, for getting the word out, because a lot of this, you know, doesn't get out to people. And it's a good education for folks to hear, you know, kind of the banter of what's going on, what the boots on the ground, and then why things are going a certain way. Because they probably just shrug. Most people just have their daily lives. They want to, you know, they got kids or they got family or they got other issues. They don't want to be dealing with these things or paying that close of attention. So I'm really glad you're putting this out there and helping to educate Californians as to what's going on and how we can make it better.
Well, we appreciate your work as well, and thank you for coming on. And as always, you're always welcome back on. I know you can talk more we could probably do a whole another hour of this show. I know you love to talk about that. We get you all fired up, and then you just want to keep talking. So
I know. That SDG&E thing is just, I can't believe it, but that's what's coming. Already mentioned about the free housing for migrants or the we talked about that.
We already talked about that. So
okay,
we're gonna have to we'll have to get a list next time of everything so that we can make sure we cover everything next time. But that's why you're welcome back anytime you want to come on, Jim. So don't feel.
All right, Phil, I appreciate it.
Don't feel bashful about coming back on.
Well, you need some better internet. But we'll work on that next time.
Can we bring that up at the next? Yeah, let's do that at the next county supervisor meeting. Be like, I was on a podcast and the internet was terrible. I think we need better. We need an investigation into why Spectrum is so bad.
Oh, yeah. A committee. We need a new committee.
We need a new committee. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, Jim, for coming on. As to everybody, make sure you like, share, subscribe, review, all that stuff. And the best way to support this show that's absolutely free is share it with somebody. Just send them this video, send them the audio podcast, send them all that. And we'll see you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody. Later.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it. And follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.